The Guardian.
World Cup Daily with James Richardson on guardian.co.uk.
Day 16 of the World Cup, the knockout stages begin. In Rustenburg, Black Stars of Ghana go through as USA, watched by Bill Clinton, let the others get ahead, go down again and get taken to the cleaners. Must remind him of someone else he knows. Awaiting them in the quarterfinals, Uruguay, who put the Parks on the bus home, knocking out South Korea. Sunday looks set to be even more exciting as the world comes to a halt for England, Germany, with potentially more bookings than Sven's agent and with more lunges than Sepp Blatter's social diary. It's set to be a hard-hitting affair, as is our preview of the game with Honigstein and Ingle head to finely sculpted head. All of that, plus a quick nod to Argentina-Mexico, coming up in today's World Cup Daily. Hello, listeners around the planet. Barry Glendenning and Jacob Steinberg of The Guardian joining me, AC Jimbo, here in the pod. And it's been a rip-roaring night of knockout football with the USA put out by Ghana. Barry, you did the minute-by-minute, every minute of the 120. And your reaction?
They deserved to win. They started the better and dominated till halftime. The States were awful. And then the States had a right good go in the second half, equalised through a penalty, and Ghana won it in extra time. America can have no complaints.
Tremendous scenes there at the stadium and really all over South Africa from what people were saying as Ghana made their way through to the quarterfinal. Let's now hear, if we can, from Fui Chikata, who was there at the stadium, one of our correspondents worldwide. Fui, where are you now?
I'm actually heading from the stadium. I'm in a bus. I'm going to Johannesburg. Thank you.
Okay. How was the stadium for you tonight?
Amazing. I mean, even as I speak, I see Ghanaian flags outside on the road, hanging out from cars. But inside the stadium, it was incredible. I mean, you should have heard the noise when KP Boateng scored that early goal. All in all, it was amazing. It was great.
Must have been a really frustrating second half when Ghana let the Americans back into the game.
It was frustrating, but in a way, I've actually come to expect that. And the match against Germany is probably the only match where we've been able to keep our concentration for the full 90 minutes. So I wasn't too biased. I was hoping that we'd score a second goal before that happened, but the Americans meant business as well.
The only African team left in the competition. How far can this Ghana go?
Well, you know, I just spoke to Abedi Pele, and I will sort of adopt his attitude. He says, you know, take it one game at a time. You just never know what could happen. This tournament has been full of surprises. Obviously, our next opponent is Uruguay, a very strong team. I think they're a bit underrated. But you never know. I think if, you know, unfortunately, we're going to miss the best player, Dede Ayew, but you know, anything can happen. You know. So we're hoping for the best against Uruguay. And we shall see after that, I guess.
Are you going to be there at the Uruguay game?
Oh, yes, I have to be. I mean, it's in Johannesburg, it's in Soccer City, I believe. It's probably going to be packed. I mean, the only team left, like you said, from the continent. I'm sure we had quite a bit of South African support today. I suspect that will continue. But, you know, at the end of the day, you know, the fans also don't play on the pitch, so the players are going to have to show up either way.
All right, excellent. Fui, listen, have a safe journey back to Johannesburg. Thank you very much indeed for joining us. Fui Chikata on his bus. Ghana, how far can they go, do you think, Barry?
I think Uruguay will beat them.
Hmm.
But that doesn't really mean anything, as we know. They were good tonight. I mean, someone sent me in an email while I was doing the minute-by-minute, Jonathan, somebody or other, I can't remember his name, so I apologise if he's listening, but he likened the game to a preview of England-Germany, as in a technically poor side playing an outdated 4-4-2, the States, against a dynamic 4-5-1, 4-3-3, able to keep the ball and dominate possession in the centre of midfield. And that's how it was for the first half, but Coach Bob Bradley changed things around for the States at half time, and they roared out into the blocks for the second half and equalised through a thoroughly deserved penalty.
A fantastic little move by Clint Dempsey to win the spot kick, no?
He nutmegged one defender and then outpaced another, and Jonathan Mensah, and was brought down. Not particularly clever by Mr. Mensah. Landon Donovan sent the penalty in off the post. But you don't need me to give me a summary.
No, but Landon Donovan, I've had some experience in taking penalties and the psychology thereof.
As you never tire of reminding us. And your mental fragility in the taking.
Now, one thing that I'm pretty sure I'm right in saying is that it's not advised by any sports psychologist that you go down on your knees before you take the spot kick and stare at the turf intently, as Landon Donovan did. I was extremely concerned for him when this happened. It was the weirdest build-up to a penalty I've ever seen from a
Was it weirder than Zinedine Zidane throwing up?
Well, yeah, that's true.
But he's an American. He was probably praying to the Lord Jesus.
Well, he may well have been praying to the Lord Jesus, but to actually bend down in front of the spot just seemed to be such an admission of pressure that I would have thought it would be counterproductive. But there you go. Anyway, he scored his penalty, but in the end, Jan's a winner.
And what a goal it was.
Yeah.
I mean, it was a real hopeful Hail Mary ball up from the halfway line, and he burst between two defenders. Bocanegra tried to jostle him off the ball. He stood strong and smashed it. And he actually had a little glance up and saw where Tim Howard was and just smashed the ball past him. Great, great winner.
Does anyone else find Ghana a remarkably frustrating team to watch? Because they play really, really good football up until about 30 yards out, when any of them will just shoot from anywhere. And just, I reckon they could probably score about 10 goals a game if they just played the extra part, if they realised that they got there by passing and not just, they did it after about 4 minutes, and I wrote down, I thought that'd be a good point for the pod. And then Boateng scored a really good goal from outside the air about a minute later. I scribbled it out, but then they carried on doing it.
Ghana, how will they fare with Uruguay? You don't think they've got too much of a chance, even with the whole nation of South Africa bedraped with Ghanaian flags. Jacob, your take?
It's a really, really tough game to call. I mean, as I said, Ghana play really good football, but they just... I know tonight they were clinical, but I think that against the Uruguay team that's only let in one goal,
yeah,
if they carry on like that, then...
They look sharp today, didn't they? Did you see their game against South Korea?
Yeah, fantastic goal by Suarez to win it. It's brilliant.
That's the thing. I mean, Luis Suarez, 55 goals in 61 games, and people were talking about him not being a good finisher.
Just before he scored, I was talking to Rob Smythe, who was in the office, and we were both saying, oh, he doesn't count because he scored the worst goals in the Dutch league, and then we both had to retreat when he did that.
Eredivisie goals are like the equivalent to dog years for goals.
Yes.
In so much as...
You're thinking of Afonso Alves, probably, in his...
And Dirk Kuyt and...
Yeah. Kesman.
Kesman, yes. There are many others.
There can be no doubting that Luis Suarez has the scoring touch after that.
Well, there could have been doubting before today, but not anymore. I actually have a couple of quid on him to be top scorer at an astronomical price, I'd completely forgotten about until today. But I think he only has the two. I don't think he scored prior to
early days yet, because most people would favour them for a place in the
semi-finals. He scored the winner against Mexico.
All right, so he's
nice
got three.
Nice little header. I think he might be joint top scorer now.
Certainly sounds like it, doesn't it? Shame to see South Korea going out, you know, all that pluck and good organisation. Plus, we can't make that Three Stooges-esque riff about who's the manager. Yes, he is. Which is a shame.
Does anyone know what the goalkeeper was doing for the first goal?
Oh, yeah, that's a very good question. Muslera. Well, Muslera was a shocking goalkeeper when he first turned up in Italy at Serie A. He was the worst goalkeeper I'd...
South Korea.
I was thinking about the rubbish Uruguayan keeper.
Yeah, there are a lot of rubbish keepers to choose from.
Bother trying to get the ball. He just sort of flopped over and the ball was about 2 yards away. But forget about it. Probably won't score.
Well, there's a famous Gaelic football commentary, a match between Dublin and Kerry back in the 70s. The Dublin goalkeeper, Paddy Cullen, came out of his line and he was chipped from a very audacious free kick, and he was running back to his goal to try and save it and couldn't. But the commentator at the time famously likened him to a woman who'd left her house and just remembered she'd got a cake in the oven. And that's kind of what the South Korean goalkeeper was like today.
Right.
Came out, thought better of it. And yeah, it was weird.
Well, as I say, shame to see them go out, but Uruguay goes through. Do you know that they have had under 45% of possession in every game at the World Cup, but they remain unbeaten with 3 wins and a draw? It's very impressive, isn't it?
That is impressive.
That is impressive.
And according to our good friends at Opta, Uruguay were on the back foot for most of today's game. Like, they had 46 clearances, whereas South Korea only had to make 17.
Well, there you go. That would certainly tally with that. So what they do, they're a very effective team. Yeah.
Well organised.
Well organised, excellent.
And strikers.
They certainly do, because, you know, Forlan, before this had been the big story, and now it's Luis Suarez. A lot of love for Uruguay out there.
They are the most successful football nation in the world ever. Like, they've won, for the population of 3 million.
Oh, per capita, really?
They've won how many World Cups?
Two
World Cups, several.
No World Wars, though, yeah, but...
Several. You've really got the battle fever on for tomorrow, haven't you? They've two World Cups, several Olympic titles, several Copa Americas. Yeah.
3 million, really?
Yeah.
That's astonishing.
That's the equivalent of Slovenia or the Republic of Ireland having two World Cups.
It's amazing, isn't it?
Although most of these titles were won before Sky invented football in 1992, so many people wouldn't count them.
Well, the last one was, of course, one in the Maracanã against Brazil. That must have been... that's a big ask, as they say in Sky parlance. More quarterfinalists to come on Sunday with Argentina, Mexico and Germany, England. We'll talk more about that in a second or two. Kanaya 02 says, did it not occur to anyone in the pod that a car company may be named after a Mr. Honda, a common family name in Japan, rather than a football player having the comedy misfortune of being named after a Civic or an Accord? There's a podcast in Japan with a bunch of guys chuckling away about England's defence containing a guy named after a chocolate orange and another after baby shampoo.
Sorry, Mr. Logic. Bloody hell.
I tell you what, thanks for filling us in about that, because that had not occurred to us at all. StugB22, certainly been busy posting during this World Cup, replying to Musings of a Failure, who said, Chile versus Brazil, it's time to say goodbye to the Seleção. It's an interesting thought, that, isn't it? Because when Chile came up, when the draw began to fall into place for the knockout stages, you see Brazil, Chile, you think Brazil aren't performing as they might. Maybe this Chile team have a chance. But, says StugB22, woe their son, as Mossa states, Chile do indeed have a bad record against Brazil. Last seven games, listen to these scores. Brazil 4-2 Chile, Brazil 3-0 Chile, Brazil 6-1 Chile, Brazil 3-0 Chile, Brazil 4-0 Chile, Brazil 5-2 Chile, Brazil 1-0 Chile.
See, there are a couple of ways of looking at that. One is that the form guide goes, yes, Brazil are going to win. But I'd like to think, well, with the law of averages, Chile have to get a result eventually, yeah, don't they?
Well, yes, that's one way of looking at it, certainly. JC Barra tweets and says, how many are Udinese going to get into the FIFA team of the World Cup? Sanchez, Anan, Asamoah, they could have had Qualiarella. It's a good point, this, because so many of these young players that commentators pick out and say, oh, here's a fellow we didn't know about, they're all Udinese. Handanovic, there's another one. Hayitsva says, is this the tournament that may see a new country added to the list of World Cup winners? Are we going to see somebody apart from the Big Seven win this World Cup, Jacob?
Ghana.
Uruguay?
Uruguay have already won, I guess.
Yeah, that's...
Holland.
Holland, you could have Holland.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe. If they play, I could see them beating Brazil if they were to face each other.
Portugal?
No.
All right. Holland?
No. Holland, maybe. All Portugal, right. I wouldn't say. So, no.
Spain?
Good call by Barry. Yeah, good.
If England weren't part of the Big Seven, would you suggest England?
Personally, no, I wouldn't.
Would you?
No, I wouldn't.
Would you have 2 weeks ago?
No. I said 2 weeks ago that they weren't going to win the World Cup.
Mm.
But Spain aren't looking great, though. So
maybe they're going to have a surprise in store for us on Sunday when they take on Germany. The mood in England is an excited one. Tin hats on front pages. And shots of the Germans on safari with jokey headlines about them being scared of three lions.
Aren't they sponsored by Adidas?
Three lions. Ha-ha!
World Cup Daily from The Guardian with James Richardson.
Raphael, thanks very much for joining us. Of course, this is a big night for you. I imagine you won't be getting much sleep.
That's right, James, because I'm taking a German media bus at 7 in the morning.
I'm
looking forward to a 6-hour drive. Yeah, it'll be great.
All right. Is it a mood of cautious optimism among the German correspondents?
Among this German correspondent, it is. I'm much more confident now that Bastian Schweinsteiger seems to have recovered from his hamstring problem. It really makes a huge difference whether he's on the pitch or not. And with him, I think we've got a chance. Not a big one. But if England continue to perform sort of below their true potential, I think we can do it. If, on the other hand, we somehow bring out the best in them for once, then I think they'll beat us, because, you know, if you just look at the potentials of the two teams, England should beat us if they play at their level.
Hmm. If you look at the potentials, then they should perhaps win. If you look at what the two teams have done in South Africa so far, Germany should win.
Yeah, I don't know. England unbeaten, James. I think it's the way we have to put it this now, with all the optimism. You know, I didn't think they played that badly against USA. Algeria was obviously a disaster, and Slovenia was half all right against a very, very poor team. Firstly, for me, the worst team I've seen in a stadium. And Germany have been a little bit hit and miss. It's difficult to know, I think, with Germany, just how good this team is. I tend to think that we'll know in a couple of years when they really come into their own. But because England, as you've already heard from our good friend Franz Beckenbauer, sadly slipped up a little bit and didn't finish first, we probably won't get the time to grow into this tournament. I just don't think we're quite ready yet.
What's the biggest danger in this Germany team for England?
Biggest danger, I think, is Özil playing between the lines. I think the one problem with a 4-4-2 is that you do leave yourself a little bit open in front of the back four if you don't pick up man who goes in and out like Özil does very well. Like Müller used to do very well, but Germany finds it a bit more difficult because he's stationed out on the right, and that part of the game is missing a little bit. So I think you saw against Mexico, I mean, you didn't see it, James, because you don't watch these kind of friendly games, but England playing Mexico and playing even a couple of games before that, the teams who like to keep the ball, like, they can cause them problems because they can play through them. And Germany is very much that kind of side. At the same time, they're going to leave huge gaps, and also I think they're going to be very vulnerable from set pieces, which is not a thing that Germany traditionally used to be.
I was just wondering about Mesut Ozil. He is traditionally the sort of player that England struggle against, but if they do find a way to keep him under wraps, do you think that there's enough in attack from Germany to do anything if that happens?
I mean, Klose needs to really be on his game. With Klose, it's amazing because when you talk to the managers that are actually training, they all say he's unbelievably talented. Technically, one of the best strikers they've worked with. Unfortunately, he's got this sort of inbuilt lethargic mode that kicks in from time to time, and it then takes him a couple of months to get out of it. He's been better for Germany than he was for Bayern this season, but he really needs to come into his own because he's a guy that can keep the ball, that can even take players on. It's you don't think of him that way, but he actually does it quite well. So I think he needs to be really, really, really up for this one. And then Müller needs to come back and play a bit because the last two games he was very quiet and Australia was very good, but I think we need a big performance from him as well.
Listen, Raphael, have a good night's sleep. Really enjoy your coach ride tomorrow, and perhaps we can speak to you afterwards.
It'll be my great pleasure, James.
Thank you so much, Raphael. Raphael Honigstein. But what about the English point of view? Is that Sean Ingle somewhere in South Africa?
Hello, James. How are you?
Whoa. Hi, Sean. Always good to hear from you. Long days, hard, lonely days, but you're bearing up.
I am. I'm more tired than an American dump truck at the moment, but I'm actually really enjoying it. I've been lucky with the games I've had. But I've been to games like Spain, Chile. I've seen, you know, Brazil in action. I've seen Argentina a couple of times, so I'm really enjoying it.
Attack ships in flames off the shores of Orion, etc. All that stuff. Magnificent. It's a kind of amazing. One goal against Slovenia, and it's like the Algeria match never happened. Everyone here is banging on about the rewriting history, etc., etc., etc. Now, Raphael Honigstein was just saying that if England play to their potential, they might be favourites. But what do you think about all this?
Germany are a young team. You know, it's almost like they're like a racehorse that just entered its, you know, third year, and, you know, they can progress rapidly, you know, almost race by race. And I think this German side could do that. So if you look at kind of the season that, you know, Podolski's had, he had a bad season in Germany. Klose had a bad season in the Bundesliga as well. So you're relying on the likes of Müller, Özil, and also Toni Kroos if he comes in. And it'll be fascinating to watch.
Because we were talking to Raphael and he was saying he thinks the big danger for England is Özil. Where do you think this match is going to hinge?
Well, watching Germany play, they like to push all three of their attacking midfielders right up against the opponent's back four. That's almost playing 4-4-4 effect. And also push both fullbacks, you know, up and down the wings as well. It makes a very attacking team, but I can easily see Capello just sticking loads of men behind the ball and then trying to hit Germany on the break, because Germany's defence really isn't very good. I mean, Manuel Neuer is an excellent keeper, and Lahm's very good as a fullback, But assuming Boateng doesn't make it, you know, you look at the two German centre halves. Arne Friedrich played for Hertha Berlin side that was relegated. Per Mertesacker has had a really poor World Cup, and the Germans have been talking about it. So that's their weakness, I think. You know, the German back four.
Very good, Sean. Although there are one or two question marks over our own. Listen.
But hang on a sec. Jim. I mean, you're right. But you know, so far England have only conceded one goal. So.
But they've only scored two, which is another worrying statistic.
To be honest, it's one of those games where Germany were great in the first game, haven't done a lot since, perhaps. Although the way they played against Ghana, even though it wasn't perfect, the form has always been franked by the way Ghana played tonight. And England have been hopeless, but there may be an argument that the likes of Rooney, Gerrard, Lampard, one of them's got to play well at some point. Otherwise, you know, otherwise England are going home.
All right then, Sean. Listen, thank you so much for joining us. And further updates in store for us, I hope, as this World Cup progresses. All right.
Take care, Jimbo.
You too. Thanks, Sean. Sean Ingle there. And, well, Jacob, you were sticking up for Brave England in an earlier appearance. How do you feel about things heading into this game?
It's weird. I've got a strange feeling that that England are going to win. And I think this was probably said on yesterday's pod as well. For some inexplicable reason, despite everything that's happened so far and the way that Germany have played, there's something about this that just seems like England are going to muddle their way through.
You've seen El Tel singing "Please Let My Dream."
Yeah, I've seen the Sun advert,
times.
And it says maybe, just maybe. And yeah. I don't know. I think that Germany should win, but they are an inexperienced side, and England do have some, you know, players who are around the 30 mark, and you know, they are more experienced. They might have more know-how about them, so.
I'm just a bit bewildered that everyone thinks the momentum is with England because
that's true. I watched the Germany Ghana game, and Germany were they gave up a few chances, and they had to rely on a very, very good goal by Ozil. But they still felt, you always felt they were going to win. They were very assured, and they almost looked like the team that England want to be, that England think they should be in it. And that, you know, they kept the ball well, and they kept on exerting pressure on Ghana. So they're a very good side. So England are going to have their hands full if they play well.
They are a cut above anything that England have faced so far, Barry.
Yes, absolutely. I think England need to up their game considerably to have any chance of beating Germany. I think Rooney has to play well. A lot of other players have to sort of man up and start delivering. They also need to keep possession better, which is something I'm worried they won't be able to do, because if they couldn't do it 3 or 4 days ago, they're not going to be able to do it now. It's not something you can learn in that amount of time. If they play the same way they've played in their previous three games, they'll get stuffed. But I still have this feeling in my gut, not based on any logic, like I said yesterday, that England are somehow going to get through this game and win it.
Well, there you go.
On the subject of keeping possession, armed with a stat from the other day, which I got from Opta sent to me, which is that Jermaine Defoe only made four passes in the Slovenia game. So if they start punting, you could see that England start, if they start struggling, and you see them punting it up to Defoe, and Mertesacker just nicking it off him the whole time, and Defoe and Rooney apparently didn't make one pass between each other. So I wonder if that's a good partnership.
I'm just thinking of the problems that Barry had against Slovenia, and when he's up against the likes of Schweinsteiger and Özil, and well, it's just an interesting
thing. But Barry's going to have to look after Özil, which means Germany will have an extra man in midfield, which one of the England strikers will probably have to mark. And I can see England getting pulled all out of it. I mean, if I had any balls at all, I would put my heftiest wager ever on Germany. Because at 7-4, they're only 7-4 because all these jingoistic idiots are back in England, because it's the patriotic thing to do, thus making the German price bigger. It's a massive price for Germany. But there's just something in the back of my mind, that little voice, the little man inside me is saying, no, don't do it. I think England are going to do it.
Also, if you've got Stephen Gerrard on the left, if he keeps on coming inside and not offering Ashley Cole any protection, then you've got Philipp Lahm, who loves to get forward.
Woof.
Ashley Cole's a very good left back, but if they overload him with him and with Lahm and Müller, then England could pay.
Yeah, well, important tactical points. Proper pre-game chat, that. Excellent stuff.
Not boring at all.
Now, Sunday night, meantime, another proper game. Ooh, Argentina-Mexico. Repeat, of course, of that stunning match from 2006. when Argentina put Mexico out. No less than 14 veterans of that game are in the two squads. And all sorts of excitements leading into this game, not least of which Maradona's press conference urging journalists who had criticised his qualification record to drop their trousers. He says, I'm not suggesting you drop your trousers, but it would be honest and great so we all get along better.
How would dropping the trousers help?
I'm not sure, actually, Barry. All right. I'm not sure.
For a man who went to great lengths to stress his resolute heterosexuality less than a week ago, Maradona's... seems to be very interested in the...
He's so comfortable with his sexuality that he can invite other men to drop their trousers without feeling compromised by that, and I respect that. Now, Argentina-Mexico. Are Mexico going to give Argentina a game of it, Jacob?
They will, yeah. They're a good attacking side, but they weren't very good against Uruguay the other day, and I think that, you know, the likes of Messi and Higuain, Tevez, Di
Maria. Higuain back in the side, of course, after the... The rather more stilted game against Greece. Think about Mexico. They get Jonathan Wilson very, very hot under the collar. Yeah. He said that seeing them, he said that he stumbled across the... Well, he realised that they were playing a kind of 2-3-2-3 formation, a modern version of Vittorio Pozzo's 1930s setup with the Italy side. He said... The realisation that this was happening in this World Cup was akin to the moment John Paxton first sees the pterodactyl in The Lost World. You can imagine Jonathan Wilson there in front of the television, or indeed at the stadium, dropping to his
I'm
knees.
I'm sorry, how does Jonathan Wilson know this stuff? I watch on television, it's a load of blokes running about.
Right.
Right, now is it when they're waiting for the ball to be kicked out where they stand? I'm aware of the basic formation, and you know, you look and... a Jonathan Wilson book of the illustrations and its circles carefully placed in. But if some guy like jogs forward a bit and then, I dropped my keys and jogs back a couple of yards to pick them up, Jonathan Wilson turns that, writes a new chapter in his book about it.
Yes, yes indeed.
Does it ever occur to you that possibly he reads too much into these things? I
think that half the joy of football, isn't it, that it's a very simple game, but there are levels and there are levels and there are levels. So I'm very happy for Jonathan to...
I've no problem. Jonathan is an absolute gentleman, a great crack to be in the company of, which is why I'm comfortable to completely... dismiss the validity of his life's work here in front of hundreds of thousands of listeners.
Indeed.
Speaking of which, did you know that we were second in the Big Boys proper iTunes podcast chart?
All right.
But Bad Eagle and Skinner have gone ahead of us.
All right. I tell you what, listeners, a big thanks for lending us your ears. Argentina had problems at the back, as we all know, and it looks like Walter Samuel may be out for this game. Ooh. Big news for the Mexicans, who regard Argentina as their number one footballing enemy, because every time they get a good team together and look set for some form of glory, it's always Argentina who come along and snatch it away and crush their dreams at the last.
Well, yeah, they played well against them in that second round game in 2006, but it was a fantastic goal by Maxi Rodriguez, who's going to be playing again tomorrow night.
Could well be. Well, there you go. That's one to look forward to then, Sunday night. Why don't you, hundreds of thousands of listeners, then join us after that for our roundup of Sunday's action, and I'll look forward to the last 16 games coming up on Monday. That's all in tomorrow's World Cup Daily. In the meantime, many thanks, guest producer Ian, Barry Glendenning, and Jacob Steinberg. We'll speak to you tomorrow.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.